This is my favorite game of the week. I love Purdue to win outright. I've been calling this one for 2 weeks. I've been going, I cannot wait for this line to be posted. We saw a lot of good stuff out of Purdue late last year, second half of the year, and we've seen that before. New coach, second half of the second year, much better. This year, they had horrible luck to begin the year. They lost to Northwestern by 4, and then they won the last 3 games, including back-to-back road games. This line's too high. Ohio State's been jacking around for a couple weeks now, especially in the first half. They have no motivation to blow anyone out besides Urban Meyer being a prick. That's the only reason why. There's no reason for this game not to be close. We were on Purdue last year. I like when like Purdue's ranked for some reason. It's always fun to have them as a high-scoring team, and I think they get it done this week. I hate Ohio State. Was the most accurately called week of college football we've had in a long time. Like I always re-listen to the podcast once a week, and it was like under Michigan, Michigan State, Oklahoma over, like across the board, like we like Indiana, Penn State. I was like, Indiana's going to cover this game. You know, just, it was crazy. Like if someone listened to our podcast last week, they'd think we actually knew what the fuck we were talking about. It was pretty good. So, yeah, anyway, we called last week to a T. Clemson with the Woodshed. Under in Mississippi State, LSU, called that. Utah over USC, all over that. Under in Colorado, Washington, called that. All right, I think we're ready. Let's fire.
I think we're ready. I think we're probably already in the middle of it because I might keep some of what you just said. So, Dan, people have heard the intro. Why don't you lead it off? And tell people about Purdue, your probably best prediction of the, definitely your best prediction of the year and one of your best ever.
Get out the way, yo. Get out the way, yo. Urban Meyer just got dropped. Yeah, that was about as fun of a game as you can have if you don't like Ohio State, like the three of us don't. Gotta hand it to Purdue. Everything that they needed to do to pull an upset, they accomplished. They had a 98-yard drive. The announcers kept saying how Purdue is relying on the big play all year and they can't move the ball up and down the field. Wrong. They went up and down the field the whole game. Just amazing individual performances. That wide receiver Moore, who was supposed to go to Texas, by the way, which is pissing me off now, just played amazing. When it looked like Ohio State might have that, you know, comeback in the second half, they kept their foot on the gas. Hats off to Purdue. Yeah, outright. That felt nice. Blowout, too. Even nicer.
It was good. They did everything that Penn State couldn't do a few weeks ago, which was, as you said, keep your foot on the gas, make key defensive stops when needed, and just that champion mentality, which is funny to say about a 3-3 team, but this Purdue team now is so much different than they were at the beginning of the year. And I was reading, and they basically just weren't performing well with their so-called safe plan, and they basically just said, fuck it. Like, let's throw the ball around. Let's try to have some fun. And what do you know? They are winning.
Whip Ohio State by 29.
Yeah, blowout. I love it, Dan.
Feels good.
All right, so we should do some proper introductions. I'm Tom Zeleznak. That voice you just heard was Vegas outsider Dan Partridge calling one of the best weeks of the year last week. A lot to live up to. And then the coach, Ryan Smillett, beside him, live from Arizona. So, Ryan, anything else that stuck out to you last week besides Ohio State Purdue?
Yeah, it was some really fun games. And the late night Pac-12 action was some really fun games, some disappointing games, some sloppy games. It was a little mix of everything. So, I was really enjoying the Pac-12 late night action last week.
Yeah, what's going on out west? It's unpredictable, and nobody knows who's good or who's bad week to week.
It's wildly unpredictable. You said it, Tom. There's like 8, 9, 10 teams who are going to be in a college, bowl game later this year, and It's up and down. Teams who you think are good 1 week just lay an egg. I mean, Oregon forgot to show up in the first half. Utah smash USC. Good call, Ryan, on your lock of the week. You know, just weird. We got Arizona playing the fourth stringer. We got Chip winning two in a row. Washington State's like ranked 13th somehow. I mean, crazy, crazy Pac-12 action.
Yeah, Washington State might be the best remaining playoff hope.
Oh. Yeah, somehow. Exactly, somehow.
All right, so that segues nicely into something we would like to do right now on this show. This is week 9. So we're going to do a little bit of a mid-year evaluation. Dan, why don't you start with some underrated teams who have impressed you in the first half of the year?
Sure. Florida, Utah, Fresno State, Clemson, Iowa, Houston, and Texas Tech. Florida, as you know, has had a big problem on offense pretty much ever since Tim Tebow left. Mullins, you know, came in early, had some hard first, you know, a couple games in September. But after that, they've won 4 or 5 in a row. They were off last week. Huge game against Georgia. If they win this game against Georgia, they'll be a favorite for the rest of the season and probably run the table, which is pretty crazy. Utah, the aforementioned, very underrated. Quarterback, same guy from last year. Explosive running backs and wide receivers. Extremely well coached. Awesome home field advantage. Last week's line was crazy. I mean, they were laying a touchdown to USC, which I'm sure people took USC in the points. I mean, I don't think a lot of people laid the 7 with Utah. It'd be interesting to look up.
But no, just I think just Ryan here.
I know. I think he's the only one.
Literally the only one.
Him in Vegas. I mean, Southern California generates more action than Utah. So Utah is really great. Fresno State, leading the country, fewest points allowed, 88 points on the entire year. It's given up 13 points in the last 3 games. They have their quarterback and Keyshawn Johnson Jr. back, a wide receiver from a team last year who only lost 1 regular season game. They're way better than both Boise State and Utah State. In fact, they're a -150 favorite to win the Mountain West right now. That tells you how good Fresno is and has been underrated all year.
Yeah, Dan, a 24.5-point favorite over our beloved Hawaii this week, which upset me, but probably accurate.
It is. I've been a big fan of Fresno the last 2 years. Clemson. Nobody's talked about Clemson still. People forgot. They're the second-best team in the country, and, you know, there is a saying, any given Sunday, over 60 minutes, you might win, so Clemson rolls on. They've been smashing people lately. Lawrence looks like he's given the offense and the defense a spark. You know, there's always that theory defense gets more motivated when the offense scores points. Clemson, everyone's just falling asleep on. Iowa has not given up 100 points total this year. Nice shutout last week. Just a really, you know, strong blue-collar type Big Ten team. Unders, home field advantage. Houston had a weird, rocky beginning of the season. People were unsure. You know, people hear Houston, they think Ed Oliver, they think, oh, he's, you know, the most amazing defensive lineman. They must have an amazing defense. And that's not how the season started. Houston gave up a lot of points, but their offense is ridiculous. They put up like 50 points a game. They've been covering spreads. Even last week against Navy, they were laying 11.5. All game, they were losing, tied, whatever. Then you look up, Houston wins by 17, cover. And then speaking of covers and overs, Texas Tech continues to be undervalued. Only 2 losses on the year. They got their freshman quarterback Bowman back last week from injury. Look for Texas Tech overs and covers as underdogs the rest of the year. Those are my underrated 7 teams in college football so far.
Okay. I mean, that sums it up nicely for me. Ryan, is there anything else you want to add to that list? No?
No, not really. I mean, I love the list. Obviously, a couple teams on there that are, you know, personal favorites of mine too. Texas Tech, Utah for sure. So, and Clemson. So, yeah, really perfect list.
Yeah, I like the Clemson pick. They're pretty much the only team that seems like they could play with Alabama at this point of the season. And because they do a more, I guess, more of a pro style, I wouldn't call it pro style, but pro-ish compared to most other teams. They don't dazzle people the way like a Texas Tech might, but they're the most, you know, well-equipped. they've got the greatest defensive line, you know, maybe in college football history, some are saying. And right. So I think they're well suited to give Alabama a run. They're probably the only team that can do that. Maybe Georgia if they really get their shit together. But this next category, overrated teams, Dan, this one hurts me personally.
Okay.
Take it away.
I'll do it for you. Right off the bat, Penn State. I think James Franklin is overrated as a coach. I think he's underrated as a recruiter. And, you know, I mean,
By Penn State's fans, he's properly rated as an on-field coach and properly rated as a recruiter, which is something I've been saying on this show since he started. Okay. The last couple of years with Joe Moorhead, I think, made a big difference. And we're starting to see just in tiny little ways how Ricky Ronnie just isn't quite at the same level. Against some of the bad teams, they can mask it. But they did also lose a ton of talent, so it's hard to say.
Exactly. I mean, especially over the past 2 years, Penn State's lost a lot of talent to the NFL. You know, if you go back to our season preview show, we were talking about Penn State, and we said optimistically maybe a New Year's 16, but probably a team that loses 3 or 4 games in the regular season, which sounds about right. They sound like a 7-4, 8-3 type year. You know, I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that once in a while. Next team, South Florida, still undefeated, but was struggling with UConn on Saturday. And if you struggle with UConn and your head coach is Charlie Strong and you're undefeated, you will be overrated 100%. That's the definition of overrated. Struggle with UConn, undefeated, Charlie Strong. Fade them the rest of the year, guaranteed to make money.
The nice thing about that is they have a nice, tasty line later today that we're going to get to.
Absolutely. Really.
This next one hurts me too, Dan, because I thought they were going to go undefeated.
Yep, you fell in the trap. Boise State, they're not Kellen Moore, Chris Peterson, Boise State. Everyone get that fucking bullshit out of your head. It's not coming back. That era of Boise State will never be replicated. Those teams were loaded with guys still in the NFL on those rosters. These teams are good but not great. They gave up 28 points at home to shitbag Colorado State last week. Tom, how'd you do betting Colorado State earlier this year?
Yeah, I picked them, I think, week 2 as my lock of the week, and that is one mistake I will not make again, ever.
Yes, so if you give up 28 to them at home on the blue turf, you're no good. So Boise State, overrated, and because of their name, people just assume they're going to smash people, and they're not that good. San Diego State's another one. They just squeak by every week. They played 1-7 San Diego State last week and won, I think, by 4 points. If I just threw that one on there, skip that. And I think Oklahoma's the last one. Yes, their offense is great. They're going to score a lot of points, as always. Their defense is really flawed, and every game is going to be just a complete coin flip kind of shootout going forward. I mean, TCU last week, TCU's not a great team. I almost put them on the overrated slash trash list, but Oklahoma's defense is bad. They aren't last year's Oklahoma team. Oklahoma will lose 1 or 2 games more before this year's over.
The meat of the schedule in the Big 12 always seems to come at the end. I don't know who does the scheduling, but for the tough teams, they always seem to play each other at the very end. They do it to be as exciting as possible. Whoever does the Big 12 scheduling does a nice job, because they get all the crappy Kansas games out of the way early. They always throw in that Iowa State game sometime in late September, early October for teams that always trips everyone up. But then the November games are always like Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, Texas, Oklahoma State, TCU, Texas, all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, sneaky trash teams.
Sneaky trash teams, my favorite segment of all.
I agree with all of these, by the way.
Thank you. First, Northwestern, always a trendy pick to be a good team. They struggled mightily with Rutgers last week and just pulled out a win. Like South Florida, if you struggle with the worst team in the country in Ever. October, you're trash. Michigan State, you're trash too. You lost the shitbag Arizona State team that's no good. Your quarterback was 5 of 25 for 66 yards against Michigan, which is the worst stat line I've ever seen in my life. Even worse than the Rutgers game, because this is Michigan State. It can't be this bad. A lot of shady off-the-field stuff. Michigan State is not real Michigan State. FAU, 3-4 this year. The lane train got derailed. They're running the ball all year. I don't know what's going on there. It's not the same as last year. Definitely going to hurt Lane in the coaching circuits coming up here in a couple weeks. Louisville, 2-6, complete train wreck. Man, week one we said that the Louisville playing Alabama was a really hard spot for them. We had no idea how bad of a spot that was for Louisville because they're absolute trash.
They actually played better in that game than they have ever since, even though they got blown out.
Absolutely. And the last sneaky trash team hurts me because it's one of my favorites always, one of our favorites. It's Oklahoma State. Their defense is always trash, as you know, but this year they just lost too much on offense. They lost Rudolph and James Washington to the NFL, and although they got a good running back in Justice Hill, they're just not the same team. And with that defense being bad, they're just like a mediocre 500 team. Don't be surprised to see Oklahoma State finish at 6-6 this year.
Yeah, Lane, we had a heated debate, I think the three of us last year, at the end of last year, about whether Lane should have left. And I was firmly in the camp that he should have gotten out of there after one and done. I think you guys said stay one more year, and it'll be interesting to see. Part of it is what is actually open. I think he'll still get some kind of opportunity, but
Louisville?
I think this has to be it. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Lane to Louisville will help both his career as well as Louisville. Although there's already talk of Jeff Brohm going to Louisville.
That's a bunch of bullshit.
Seems like a lateral move at this point.
Lane in Louisville has a nice ring to it. Picture him looking like Colonel Sanders with like a brown suit on. He'd fit in well.
I don't agree.
About the suit or about his fit at the team?
About his fit. Louisville, you don't want any part of that athletic department right now. They got FBI agents crawling around in the fucking buildings.
Good call.
Oh, you're right.
Stay away.
Lane plus FBI?
Not good.
No.
He's already probably getting a cell phone tap. We don't need any more.
He's definitely had to look at some IDs before inviting a girl over.
Yeah, he's got to bring it back to our man Tupac. He's had to do the video confession pre-relations.
All right. So that concludes our mid-year evaluation. Oh, yeah, last category. The best team in the country, it's Alabama. That's it.
Yeah, our friend George, who was at the Tennessee-Alabama, just texted me and has declined to appear on the show tonight.
Yeah. No, he's not in.
No, but I was watching the game and I felt so, I mean, I was out at an event, college reunion thing. So all I saw was whatever was on like the corner TV in the bar. So no audio or anything, not the best way, but you know, I just checked up and saw the score occasionally. And I just each time felt so bad for George because while I'm sure he had a good time, not the outcome that Tennessee fans probably wanted.
No, if I may, Tom, a quick story from I was at work and we have some TVs at the place I work and some gentlemen were about to have a bite to eat and I walked in and one of my employees said, "Hey, would you know what channel CBS is?" And this was Saturday afternoon and I said, "Are these gentlemen trying to watch the Alabama-Tennessee game?" And they looked up at me and they said, "Yeah." Now here's where the story gets funny. The one guy looks at me and says, "What team do you root for?" And before I can answer which college football team I root for, he gave me my choices. My choices were Georgia, LSU, or Alabama. He said, "What team do you root for? Georgia, LSU, or Alabama?" And I was
the
like,
"The only teams that matter, Danny."
That, first of all, that's the best question I've ever been asked. So he just excluded everything else. I answer by saying, "Sir, I'm a fan of the entire SEC and can't choose."
Oh, see, he knows from that you're not a real Southerner. I mean, also probably from your accent and other ways, but
at that point the conversation got awkward, and he didn't.
It did not. It did not just mean more to you, Dan, and that's got to be upsetting to him.
He didn't think that was a clever, funny comment. He was like, "You're not a real man. You didn't make a decision," in his head. That was the look he gave me, followed by telling the bartender, "Come on, this guy's not answering." So then he was pissed. I mean, I had to get out of there. But I do applaud that the guy gave me three team choices on who to root for. So that, I thought that was a good story.
That is pretty solid.
Yeah.
All right, I think it's time for the lines, Dan. I'm having a little internet email difficulty, so I'm going to toss it over to you.
Okay.
Read off the lines and give us your picks.
Okay. Well, we still use Earthlink over here, so our Earthlink connection's good. What do you use?
Yeah, I didn't want to get into the details. My internet's fine. Your email has disappeared from my Gmail, and I have no clue what happened. It's not in the junk. It just disappeared like Duchovny Fox Mulder style.
Well, that happens from time to time, Tom. That's okay. We have the technology.
You Snapchat emailed me.
Ooh, Tom, I think that's a wave of the future. You just thought of it. Okay, I just emailed it over to you live on air. But anyway, we're going to start off Thursday night. We're going to go conference by conference tonight. Change it up a little bit. ACC off the bat, Thursday night, Georgia Tech at Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech laying a field goal, total of 59.5. Ryan, you know Virginia Tech better than both of us. What's going to happen here?
This is a tough one for me. Josh Jackson is out. Again, Taquan Marshall is probable for Georgia Tech. I'd say between the two, Marshall is the most important player in this game. And for that reason, I'm actually going to take Georgia Tech plus the 3, despite how hard it is to win a night game in Blacksburg and on the road. Georgia Tech's option offense is just able to do that. It's the old saying in football, defense and running game can travel. That's all Georgia Tech is. It just makes sense to take the points.
I like the under. A couple of injuries on both sides. Georgia Tech running the ball. That's a lot of points for Blacksburg. It doesn't seem like a lot of games go over 60 points in that stadium, so we'll go under.
I have no opinion. Moving on.
I like that, Tom. I like a strong no opinion. Okay,
Dan, it's not on your list, but I want you to hit me with the Friday game because I got an opinion on that one.
Friday game?
No.
Are we going conference by conference?
Yeah, I got it. I'm referring to the Miami Hurricanes and Mr. Mark Richt traveling to Boston College on a Friday night where they are Boston College, I believe, is getting 3.5 points at the moment as of this recording. Dan, what happens every single year around this time?
Around this time, a team from Florida with a shitbag coach gets on a plane and they fly north and it's cold. It's not good. And they lose outright.
I live in New England. Can you describe what I'm wearing to the
listening
audience?
You got on some sort of outdoor hunting fleece over a business professional / I still listen to rock music button down.
Sure.
Flat.
That's the flannel hoodie combo with, of course, t-shirt underneath.
Three layers, October 24th. Fourth and layer in November, fifth layer in December. That's how this goes.
And I'm from here. I've never lived. The furthest south I've lived is New York City.
You are Ukrainian. It's in your blood.
That's right. I'm Ukrainian via upstate to Connecticut, to New England. And I'm fucking freezing.
Yeah, there you go.
So let's think about what the Miami Hurricanes are going to feel when they come up on a cold Friday night. Friday is supposed to rain, supposed to be the tide for the coldest night of the week. Mm-hmm. They're not going to love it. I will take those points with Boston College, and this is strongly under consideration for my lock of the week.
I really like that, Tom. Good call. I there's no way that you can take Miami. Agree.
Cross and that doesn't even consider the Mark Richt angle of it.
Well, that's a whole, I mean, yes.
Richt's that's just a bonus.
A whole nother layer on top of that. All right, we're moving on. Next game, North Carolina State at the Syracuse Orange. Syracuse -2, I believe, in this game.
1.5 to 2, depending where you look.
You guys are more Syracuse fans than me. Do you want to start this one off? Syracuse is actually getting 2 points. NC State -2, 64.5.
Okay. I'll jump in. I think NC State's a bit overrated. I don't really think they're as good as people say they are. I don't think they're going to be much of a threat in the ACC at all. But that being said, with Syracuse, I'm not really sure who's going to be playing quarterback. If it's DeVito, I say take the points. If it's going to be Dungy, I stay away from this game. I think the over-under is pretty dead on. I would stay away from that too.
Yeah, agreed. Total stay away for me. The line is right on. This game's a coin flip, as evidenced by the line. And don't like the over-under. The weather will not be a factor since it's in the Carrier Dome. The Carrier Dome, which does not even have air conditioning, so it'll actually probably be quite warm there. NC State regulated climate. So, yeah, I got nothing. NC State will feel right at home. This has like one overtime, or like a, you know what I'm going to call this? Double overtime, 3 points total scored in the two overtimes.
I like it.
Okay.
I like Syracuse. A lot of missed field goals and fumbles.
I like Syracuse. I think Syracuse wins. I don't think this NC State team's any good, but that's just me.
All right. At least you made a pick.
Thank you.
Unlike at the airport, Dan, under all the pressure, no. You've actually been a man and made a decision today.
Those guys weren't happy with me. I should have said, like, I don't know, Vanderbilt, and just ran out the back door or something like that.
They would have laughed. I mean, you have to say something else, like Ole Miss.
No way. They might, like, throw something at me and be like, you're a rebel? Be like,
oh. Yeah, or I guess Auburn. Of those three teams, if those are his choices, then Auburn would probably be the one who pisses him off the most, right? Anyway, you don't want to, yeah, the Gators too. You don't want to mess with a guy who asked that question. It just means more. I don't know if you've seen the multi-million advertisements. They don't mess around.
Hilarious. Okay, last one from the ACC. Clemson at Florida State. Clemson laying 17 points, total of 51. I'll take this one. I like Florida State in this game. Now.
Oh. Explain yourself.
I'm sorry, guys. I know. That's why.
Hey,
I
no. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying you will have to explain this because it's tough.
Florida State quietly has played a lot better the last 3 or 4 weeks if you look at the stats of the game. People, you know, will look at the beginning of the season, which rightfully so, was a total mess. It was so bad that we have Johnny Drama starting an episode of Take the Points. Don't get me wrong. I remember these things.
Yeah, but, Dan, are you a secret Willie Taggart fan now?
No, the guy is horrible. But I just, again, question Clemson's total motivation here. They're going to run the table. Florida State has a chance to put it all on the line and redeem themselves, at least have a close game for their fans, something, one thing this year to try to make them happy. I'll take the 17 at home. I don't love it. I probably won't bet it, but if I had to pick a side, it's Florida State. I'm sorry.
Dan, there's a reason this line went from 14 to 17.
I'm getting yelled at. I'm getting out of here.
Within about 9 hours of opening at 14 even, it skyrocketed to 17. I was prepared to make this my lock of the week at 14. I'm still considering it at 17.
Go ahead, Tom. You want to yell at me too?
Nah. I want to yell about Michigan State. So let's move on to the Big Ten.
Oh, you love the Big Ten.
I do. Hey, this is my conference.
This is your conference.
I have a pick for Iowa Penn State, but I know that you guys are probably going to pick the same thing as me. So I'll let you handle that. I have no pick for Wisconsin at Northwestern. And I want to talk about Michigan State and how much they fucking piss me off, basically. They go to Penn State, to Happy Valley. Just like a tough environment to play. They shut down Penn State's pretty prolific offense. We talked about how they're a little overrated, but still a good offense. They've got Trace McSorley. They've got Miles Sanders, Mr. Pennsylvania. They've got some weapons. Michigan State completely shuts them down, does a nice fourth quarter drive and comeback. Looks like a really top 15 echelon team. Come back the next week, completely shit the bed against their arch rival at home. They score 7 points. And so this is the inconsistency that I've been railing about for how long have we been doing this show? 7, 8 years? Yeah, yep. And this is why I originally used to call it the Michigan State no fly zone for teams I just would never bet under any circumstances. Michigan State was on there. Georgia under Mark Richt was on there. There were some others. Herm is probably on there now.
For sure.
But anyway, all the evidence points to Purdue coming off a huge blowout win against Ohio State, who's much better. Why wouldn't they just go in and throttle Michigan State, right? So this is absolutely then the type of game that Michigan State's somehow going to win 16-15. Even though it makes no sense, Michigan State's going to end up winning this game by 2 points. I absolutely will not bet it, but I'm mentally preparing myself for that now because I know that's what's going to happen. 17-16.
Your theory makes sense, Tom. Normally I would agree with you. That's why I kind of took Florida State. But I disagree. I really like Purdue. I think they're the real deal. I think they're going to win out regular season.
All right.
Brian doesn't like the Big Ten, so we can move on to another Big Ten game. Let's go on to Iowa at Penn State, Tom. Penn State Nittany Lions laying 6.5 at home with a total of 51. You get to start this one.
No, we're on the same page. I'm positive, and it is going to hurt me to say it, so I'm going to let you do it.
I like the under in this game.
Oh, all right. Not what I was expecting.
No, I'm not going to pick a side. I think I wouldn't be surprised either way what happens. I just think Iowa's got a really good defense. Penn State in big games seems to have really low scoring second halves. It's weird. Under 51, I like.
51, huh? Yeah, that sounds good. I think that 6.5 is too high of a line. The way Iowa's defensive has been playing and the way Penn State has been not throttling, not putting the pedal to the metal or whatever we said, don't have the killer instinct. Even if they get a lead, I find a strong possibility for backdoor cover. I think there's a good chance this ends up as like a 3-point game. I think there's a 30% chance Iowa wins outright. So my money, despite being a lifelong Penn State fan, is absolutely Iowa and the 6.5. I don't think the line will go up, but I would wait a couple days and see if you could get it at 7, which would really be nice.
Okay, good call. And the last Big Ten game, just for an official pick, Wisconsin travels to Northwestern. Wisconsin land a touchdown. Northwestern's no good, and this goes along with your kind of Purdue, Michigan State theory. Northwestern probably look ahead last week against Rutgers, not trying. They got Wisconsin, yada yada. But they're just not a good team. So lay the 7 with Wisconsin and let Wisconsin do what they do at the end of every October, which is roll a team like 34-10, which I think is going to happen in this game. Wisconsin and the under. Hook it.
Yeah, Wisconsin would be my pick, but I don't love Wisconsin the way I have in previous years. So maybe a small bet or a stay away for me.
Okay. Z, if you say it's a stay away in the Big Ten, it's a stay away for everybody. I'll tell you that.
I mean, listen, Wisconsin would be the side if you're picking for sure. That's another one where it's 7 points and maybe you can wait a day or two and get it at 6.5.
All right, Tom, we're going on to the random ass games. You know what?
I got thoughts on all three of these, Danny.
Okay, we're going to start right off the bat with the biggest game of the whole week. The University of Massachusetts Minutemen loads up on the Peter Pan buses, travels down the highway, down 91 South. They connect with the 291. They run it up with the 84, and they get over to Rentschler
Field. Oh, you're really taking the loop around Hartford. You could just go 91 to Route 2 if you want a more direct one, but they don't actually want to go through that city traffic, Dan.
That's correct. You want to take 291 and bypass Hartford to get closer to Rentschler. Anyway.
Listen, people say you get no insight on Take the Points.
Well, here's some insight for you. UConn's a dog. 5-point dog at home to UMass.
Total. Dan, before you give any pick, I just want to talk about this line itself.
Yeah, go right ahead.
There have been some lines this year that have been jaw-dropping, eye-popping, questionable, made you pause, stop in your tracks. But Dan, the UConn Huskies, ostensibly a major college program, getting 5 at home against UMass. This is like the, there are like, when you're a UConn fan, well, there are no UConn fans, but when you're a person who lives near the stadium like myself, and you look at that lineup and you're like, huh, should I go to a game? Should I watch a game? I don't know. What's a game they might win? Every year there's about 2 games that you can circle with a pencil saying, this is a potential win. They'll at least be favored. Usually it's the first game of the year against like Holy Cross, Villanova, some 1AA team, Lehigh. Mm-hmm. The other one is UMass, usually.
Homecoming weekend, probably.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sure it is. Well, you're the alumni. You would know that one better than me. But anyway, this is the one you would circle. It's always in pencil with UConn, but you would circle this game and you would say, you know what? UConn might have a rough season, but at least this one they're going to win. Then you flip open your sportsbook.ag account on the Monday of game week to see that UConn is not only an underdog, but by more than a field goal to UMass. Dan, not everyone who listens to this show is from the Northeast. A lot are from the Southwest. You know, we have some people all over the country. People listen. There's like one guy in Japan who listens to this show. Could you describe the state or the state that the UMass football program has been in forever?
A non-existent state.
Glorified flag football, perhaps?
Yeah, they're not.
I mean, they had that one guy from the Giants.
UMass has lost 3 games in a row coming into this game, and they're laying 5 on the road at UConn. If this game was at UMass, they're saying this line's like UMass minus like 15. I'm not even making that up. It's like,
yeah, I mean, usually you add about 13, 6.
14, 15, it's in the high teens. It's in the teens is what I'm trying to say.
Right. So I'm saying like 11 or 12.
I don't want to talk any more about this because this is my lock of the week, and I'll talk about it later.
Okay. Well, I have a pick for this game, but I don't want to spoil your lock. So we'll wait till later.
Snooper,
I like UConn, Danny. You got to pull through once a year. Once a year, you got to pull through and lose by 3 or less.
Go UConn. Theory. All right. Well, thanks.
Everyone besides Rutgers has to win a game or two.
I got you, Tom.
You know what I mean? Even the worst teams of the worst years of our life, they always end up winning one or two. And if you look at UConn's schedule, there aren't many, if any, other opportunities. So this is it.
We'll talk about it at the end of the podcast. All right. Moving on for other nonsensical games. Non-major conference games, I guess we'll say. Houston hosts South Florida, laying 7.5 points with a total of 74.5. That's a big total. I wouldn't mess with that. But this just shows you, Houston is rated properly by Vegas, laying 7.5 to the undefeated South Florida squad. I like Houston to whip South Florida. This will begin the South Florida downfall. Houston, lay the 7.5.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yeah, we sort of hinted at this one earlier, but for sure. Yeah, Houston, 47-20. I would not take that over.
They struggled with the UConn Huskies last week, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, that's all you really need to know.
That's right. I mean, if I had to pick, I would actually lean the under in that one.
Yeah. All right. Last game of the slate, we have Notre Dame traveling to Navy to play. Oh, sorry. Other way around. Navy, Notre Dame this week.
This is a neutral Notre Dame field, right?
This probably is. Neutral.
Soldier Field, I believe. Something like that.
Yeah, probably Soldier Field. Yeah, I think you're right. Notre Dame laying 23.5. Navy's not that good this year. I mean, not that they're ever, you know, world beaters, but They did play in a really high scoring game last week against Houston. So Notre Dame, again, they don't have a ton of motivation to blow anyone out. I'll take the 24-23.5 and hope for the best.
Total stay away for me.
I said as a joke, probably 3 or 4 weeks ago, we were talking about, I believe you can go back and listen if you want. The episode is called "You Forgot About Brian Kelly" or something like that, based on a Dan quote. And you were joking about how Notre Dame looks great, but you forgot about Brian Kelly as the coach. And I made an offhanded comment, not even knowing their schedule, that, yeah, they look good and they'll win this big game against Stanford or whoever they're playing, but they're going to blow it down the road against like Navy or someone. I figured they would play Navy because they always do, but I just made that up. Gentlemen, I think this game's going to be close. Real close. Too close for comfort. I don't know if I'm bold enough to call an outright win by Navy, but I feel like if you're a Notre Dame fan, you're going to really sweat this one out.
Okay. I like it.
I may be way wrong, but for no. Sure, I'll take 24 points.
Yeah, I'm going to take Navy too and hope for the best. All right, we're going to the Big 12 where things are getting fucking wacky. Thursday night, Baylor Bears at West Virginia. West Virginia laying just 14. Seems a little light. What do you think there, Ryan?
I think that is really a low spread. I think Morgantown is worth at least a touchdown on a Friday night or Thursday night, whatever night game, weekday night game in Morgantown is at least a touchdown. I think that they're at least 3 touchdowns better. So for me, this is a big play in West Virginia.
All right. You know, this is weird. Like, normally it would be a no-brainer West Virginia, but they looked so awful against Iowa State that it's hard to trust the offense. But Baylor's defense is not even a real defense, as we know. Texas had no starting quarterback last week and marched up and down the field, and they were lucky to win – or, sorry, 2 weeks ago. I'll take West Virginia as well. It seems a little light.
All right. I'm going to defer to you guys on the entire Big 12 this week.
Okay, then this is a tricky one coming up next. Texas Tech at Iowa State. Iowa State -3.5. This is strictly about home field and what happened last week. Can Iowa State do it again? Probably. Not that Texas Tech is like, you know, a top 10 team, but they're pretty damn good. Total's just 56. That's too low. I don't care about weather or defense or how good fucking West Virginia or how awful they looked. It's Texas Tech. 56, over.
Yeah, totally agree. The over is the play on this. I really want to take the points. I really want to take them, but it's probably a stay away. Although if it goes back the other way, it opened at 5.5 and moved to 3.5. So if it goes back, you know, 4+, that might be a play too.
Mm-hmm. And last but not least, in the Big 12, our Texas Longhorns, who, by the way, kind of control their own fate to, like, win the whole thing somehow still, are playing Oklahoma State. They're laying 3.5 on the road with a total of 59.5. The problem is we don't know the status of quarterback Sam Ellinger. So you really can't make a play. I will say, hats off to the coaching staff choosing a quarterback, because Ellinger is way better than Shane Buechel. It's not even close. I saw last time they played against Baylor. I mean, if it was close, then he should have lit up Baylor, and it was not good. I hope he's okay. Oklahoma State's not great. If you remember, they had their big win earlier this year against a shitbag Boise State team where they had to score 2 touchdowns on special teams because the punter on Boise took an extra step. Oklahoma State's not good. Do not be scared of this team. If you find out Ellinger's starting, hammer Texas. That they're the best play of the whole week, in my opinion. All right, are you guys ready to go to the real conference and see what team you root for?
I am. All right. I want to talk about, I was not aware until about a week ago that we are not supposed to call it the cocktail party anymore.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. 2 or 3 seasons ago.
Yeah, Ryan, what's it called now? Do you remember?
I don't.
Okay, I'll look this up. It's called like the world's biggest get together or some lame shit.
I honestly don't. Well, I guess we'll start with the game of the week in the SEC and then work backwards. Florida, Georgia, I don't care what you say. World's biggest cocktail party going down. Neutral site, Georgia, -6.5. Total of 52. No respect for the Florida Gators, but Georgia's really, really, really good. Don't let that one loss fool you. This is a tough game. I'll start this one out. I like Florida. There's something about this Georgia team. I don't know. It just doesn't feel like last year. I don't know if it's because, you know, the two running backs aren't there. I don't know if it's just last year was a new experience for them finally going over the hump, but they just don't seem to have the energy. Like, it started with, like, some lazy non-covers towards the end of September. I think Florida plays a tough game. Mullen is just a fucking machine. I mean, you watch him on the sideline, he's just like counting the clock and like pacing. It's hard to describe that Florida Vandy game 2 weeks ago was really fun, one of the best games of the year. But I like Florida to keep this game close and an under 52. Hook it. That's a great play, by the way, because you get plus a touchdown and under 52, so they kind of go hand in hand. One of my favorites. Z, have you found out the answer to what the hell this is called?
Yes and no. I need more research. It says the nickname of the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. That name is no longer used officially. It does not list a new name for some reason. But then it says, I want to read this. I'll skip around a little from Wikipedia, but in addition to being important to the city of Jacksonville, the Georgia Golden Isles also depend on the game to sustain businesses through the winter season. .. 10,000 Georgia students gather each year at the aptly named Frat Beach.
Oh, Frat Beach. Good place.
I would like to know more about Frat Beach. Who would it? Maybe in a future episode. I'd also like to know more about Jake Fromm's mysterious hand injury he sustained in the offseason. Obviously, it hasn't really affected his play, but they never really gave us any information. They just said he was at a frat party and like hurt his hand. And there's a lot of different ways that could have happened.
It's true, Tom. What do you got for a pick in this game?
What do I got for a pick? What's the line again?
Georgia -7, total 52.
Yeah, too many points for a resurgent Florida team. This is a close one for me because I do like Georgia to get the win, but I agree with you on the hook, take the points and the under, although I possibly don't have the same level of confidence that you do.
It's a good hook. I like that hook. Ryan.
Go Dogs.
Yeah, you love Georgia, I know.
I like them for the win, but, you know, I'm thinking something like a 27-23. Where it's a pretty close game and it's pretty close to the total.
All right. Moving on. Kentucky Wildcats -7 at Missouri. No, correction. Kentucky Wildcats at Missouri. Missouri laying 7 points.
Yeah, +7. The number 14 team in the country, Dan, the Kentucky Wildcats.
You know, that's a good point, Tom. Sometimes when sports betting, you forget about the top 25 polls, and then you'll like watch the bottom line for scores. You'll go, what the hell is this? It doesn't really make sense. So we actually made our own top 25 list, if you want to hear it at the end of the show, maybe.
Yeah. Let's do that at the end. But it was somebody, I think it was actually Colin Cowherd, who I make fun of all the time on this show throughout the years. But I'm sorry if this was somebody else, but he said, I'll take Vegas over the AP poll any day of the week.
Of course. No brainer. I mean,
yeah, it's a no brainer when you think about it, but a lot of times you just sort of go through your life looking at the AP poll and sort of trusting it because we grew up before really sports betting was so prominent. And certainly there was a long time where we were kids where we'd look at the AP poll every week and obviously not the lines. So I think I'm still accustomed to really trust the AP poll, and you probably shouldn't.
You're right. So in this game, it's weird. Missouri, again, another team that played Alabama. The next week, they played Memphis last week. They destroyed Memphis. They hung 66 on them, beat them by 30 points. We talked about it potentially.
As predicted on Take the Points.
Thank you very much. You know, the Missouri's a hard-ass team to predict. They're up and down week to week. Again, they do have Drew Locke. 7 sounds about right at home. I mean, when Kentucky played at A&M, it was 7. They took them to overtime by scoring on defense with 2 minutes to go, or else it would have pushed. So I think the spread's right on. I think the total's right on. For the first time today, I think you're going to hear me say the word stay away. I think it's right on.
All right, agreed.
Defense travels, running game travels. Kentucky's got a phenomenal defense. Dan was talking earlier about teams that have given up less than 100 points on the season. Kentucky's on that list.
Yep.
As a top 6 defense in the country. So for me, I really like Kentucky. I like Benny Snell Jr. a lot. He's probable to play. He's just awesome. Like, that dude's going to play in the NFL. Like, he's just a beast. So I actually kind of like Kentucky in this spot. I like getting a full touchdown. And if it keeps going, you know, you might even be able to get a 7.5, and that's really tasty.
All right. Last game in the SEC this week. Late week in the SEC. Texas A&M at Mississippi State. Mississippi State -2 with an NFL total of 44 in this game. Mississippi State has not scored a lot of points this year. Z, what are your thoughts on this game?
Oh, the Joe Moorhead system, I will give him a couple years to implement it. You go in, you have a different conference, a different style of play. He's different than what they've seen down there. So I think that's your reason for Mississippi State sort of underperforming. I haven't really followed Texas A&M that closely, to be honest. So I don't really have a pick in this game. They've somehow flown under my radar all year. So what is the total in this one?
44.
Ugh. Yeah, you can't go under that. I got nothing.
Yeah, well, you know, a couple things here. A&M has 2 losses. One was to Alabama, one was to Clemson. They've been outscored points for and points against on the year. However, they're the only team that can probably lose 2 games and still make it to the national title. There is a path for A&M still, which is crazy. They're pretty good. And Mississippi State scores no points. Over the past 4 weeks, here are the amount of points they've scored in each game. 7, 6, 23, 3. That's not good. And honestly, they only played one other real team besides that. It was Kansas State, and they only scored 31, and Kansas State's no good this year. Even though the total's 44, I still like an under, as crazy as that sounds. So, under, and I don't know who wins the game.
Yep, under's the play. 44 does not scare me.
Nope. I mean, it's probably accurate, but do you want to put yourself through that kind of misery?
Yep, I love it. I love the pain of unders.
The under is the worst bet in all of sports betting, and when it's 44, it's just gritting your teeth the whole way.
Well, sometimes, you know, he's got to change the channel, Tom. Pretend like it's not going on.
Yeah, I act like I'm going to watch this game.
Speaking of like you're going to watch any of these games, Pac-12 to close it out on Saturday night. No.
Hey, last Saturday I was up till 3 a.m.
Good man. You're on the West Coast. You're seeing
and then I almost died the next day. Well, I felt so tired.
Next year, Tom, or any year, anytime you can ever escape for a weekend, anytime in your life, come out. But preferably come on a week where Hawaii has a home game so we can have the full West Coast football experience. Starts at 9 a.m. Wisconsin Northwestern kicks every Saturday. Every Saturday at 9 a.m. Wisconsin Northwestern kicks.
Yeah, that's nice to get those, what we used to call the Doris Burke games, out of the way at 9 a.m.
It's great. It really is. So then you're like awake, and at 12:30, boom, SEC hits you right in the face, 12:30 every Saturday. And then you can do some shit in the afternoon, but like, you better get ready because 5 p.m. is the ABC Big Ten game. And then there's a bunch of like Really good stuff. And then you are in prime spot to watch Fresno at 7:30 kick off against San Diego State. Then, if you're losing that by halftime, you can roll it all in Hawaii in the over that starts at 9 p.m. And if you're really degenerate, that ends at 1 a.m. You only got like a couple hours to kill to English Premier League soccer, and that'll take you right into NFL.
Well, listen, now with these London NFL games,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that's got to be, what, 4 in the morning for you?
6:30.
It's 6:30, and the Hawaii game ends at 1 a.m., so there's only a 5.5 hour gap between college football and NFL.
I mean, I guess you got to sleep at some point.
Yeah, the 5.5 hours where Hawaii ends to when Phil Rivers chucks his first pick against the Titans.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, like, we're kind of joking, but, like, 100% honestly, I would rather watch the 1 a.m. Hawaii versus Nevada than the 6 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
Titans Jets.
It's not close. Why? All right, every week.
Well, I mean, it's easy for us to say, but like, allegedly, one of these are professionals playing at the highest level of football, and the other is allegedly like low level college. Yeah. Why is the one so much better?
Cole McDonald's the real star. No, I mean, me and Ryan always say, why is ESPN not to show every Hawaii game? Like, there's no reason ESPN2 is not showing Hawaii Nevada kicking off at midnight Eastern. There's no reason.
It'd what is honest. Generally on ESPN at 10 you know o'clock what? Pacific
it's
time?
Sports reruns. It's a bunch of bullshit.
Bill Dance fishing. Bill Dance bass fishing in Tennessee. For all you... Wow, that I just dated myself there. Okay.
I'm laughing about this, but we are going to talk about Super Mario 3 in a minute, so...
Yeah, first we got to power through the Pac-12 real quick.
Yeah, get it over with. I have no more comments on these West Coast games.
Okay, well, we haven't even started on them. So, here we go. Utah, Friday night, -10.5 at UCLA. UCLA beat Arizona by a point. That's no good. Utah's really good. Lay it. And the over is only 54.5. Utah might score 50 themselves.
That is exactly what I was going to say, Dan, is Utah absolutely could score over 42 pretty much with ease in this game. So for me, I love the over, and I probably would hook this.
Utah and the over. Over is that's one of my favorites the whole week.
Yep.
All right, next Pac-12 game. What do you want to talk about here? What do we got? We got Arizona State, Herm Edwards, traveling to the University of Southern California. Both these teams are utter trash.
A real coaching duel.
Oh, my God. This is so bad. USC laying 6 points, 6.5, we'll say, 54.5. Who the hell knows what's going to happen in this game? It might be 6-3. It might be 36-33. No one knows who's going to win. Both coaches are inept. This is strictly a degenerate game. There's no motivation for either team. All the players just want to go to the NFL. Everyone hates their coach, no matter what the Arizona State kids say.
They're not even thinking about the NFL. They're thinking about the hot tub after the game. Both
this
of these.
Game is a total clusterfuck. Stay far away from this game. Far, far, far away.
This will have huge implications on the Ryan Spillett worst coaching poll.
Big implications.
I'll be watching this very, very closely for the ineptitude and clock mismanagement of this game. The only comment I have is it doesn't really matter who wins. They're both losers.
There you go. Well quoted, Tom. Okay, next game. Washington State, off their hot win over Oregon, travels to Stanford. Boring Stanford, laying 3 points, total of 53.5. Sorry. I like Stanford a lot in this game. I mean, this is like classic letdown. First ESPN game ever in Pullman. Now you travel to Stanford. Stanford just knows how to win games that are like sluggish and boring at home. I just like them -3. I don't know about the total, but I think Stanford finds a way to win.
Stanford is on my no-fly zone list until I know if Bryce Love is actually has two functioning legs.
No.
He's a complete stay away. All Stanford games are complete stay aways for me.
Z, you have any thoughts on the game of Pac-12?
No, I was surprised to see Washington State beat Oregon by 14 points, and I would question whether they might actually be good, but that's sort of your department.
And we'll save it for last. Oregon at Arizona. What the hell's going on here? Oregon laying 9.5, total of 65. I don't know what's going on. I don't know if Oregon's going to win this game by 50 or lose, or Rich Rod's kid's going to play, or Khalil Tate, or quarterback number 4. I would love to wager this game, and I probably will, but I just have no idea right now whatsoever. No clue.
That's never stopped us before.
No, I know. I mean, I'm never going to bet Arizona, okay? But I'm just saying I don't know if I can pull the trigger with Oregon after how much they hurt me last week. And the Stanford. They've hurt me twice bad this year in sports betting. Kill me.
Yeah, Oregon on the road, this is more of a live bet situation.
Yeah.
See if they come out and look functioning and awake in the first quarter. Then, you know, you can probably hammer that live.
All right, boys, we've made it to the end of the lines. Congratulations. It's time now for our locks of the week. I like to go last since I've already declared my game. I think I've earned that. Tom, you?
Yes. I mean, what start. We figured, since we can only each pick one, it really should be whoever's in. It's like golf, you know, whoever won the last hole should have to go first.
Okay, so it's Ryan.
So Ryan should go first.
Okay, for my lock of the week, I'm going to bring it back to gambling in Tom's basement in high school. And one of my all-time favorite players in college football history, Major Applewhite at the University of Houston, to roll Charlie Strong. I'm taking Houston.
Awesome. NCAA football 98, is it?
All I know is that stupid-ass Texas team kept starting Chris Sims when we all knew Major Applewhite was 1,000 times better. He had to come in and save their asses in the second half every week.
You want to know? You want to hear something funny? Sam Ellinger, I think it was Ellinger. It might have been Bouchelle, whoever was playing a couple weeks ago. Let's just say it was Ellinger. If I'm wrong, substitute Bouchelle's name. But they were showing Ellinger, and they're like, he always wanted to start at the University of Texas. Here's a video of him, 2 years old, throwing a football in his backyard in like 1999, which is sad enough. But they're like, he was saying in the video, he goes, I want to be Chris Sims. I want to be Chris Sims. And all I could think was, damn it, kid, you should want to be Major Applewhite.
Damn right you should.
I like that a lot.
He's not a true Texas man.
Well said. Good pick. Tom?
All right, I'm up. I'll keep it simple. I guess gave the most impassioned plea for this team during our picks. So Boston College, your arch nemesis, Dan. Give me the 3.5. I'll lock it in at 3.5.
I like that pick, Tom. Well, here we go. Game of the week. UMass at UConn. UConn getting 5 at home at Rentschler. I went to UConn, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
There's a power rankings that go on of what the best state schools are in New England. And UMass laid claim to it in the 90s. They had the cool basketball team. They had, I think, the highest population of students, probably. It was UMass's time. But UConn, in the late 90s, started to take over, and since then, UConn's been the number one university in New England. When I was there, there was kind of a arrogance to UConn over UMass. And whenever we played them in basketball, it didn't matter what was going on, if there was a losing streak or whatever, everyone just knew that UConn was going to beat UMass. And as a true Husky, I'm telling you that this Saturday, we don't need no points. UConn's winning this game outright, just like Purdue. UConn, 38-35, overtime winner. You should go, Tom. Game of the year. Anyway, UConn's not losing to UMass this weekend. Take UConn.
All right, it's supposed to rain, so there's no chance in hell I'm sitting outside in the rain watching UConn football.
Zero.
So that's a hard pass on going to the game.
Yeah.
I agree with you, though, as I sort of said slash hinted at. They've got to get a win somewhere. I mean, even the worst teams, unless you're historically awful like those Kansas teams or this year's Rutgers, you got to win a couple games at some point, and this is the one. I mean, if they don't win this, then that could be it.
It's true. Okay.
So I have little faith. Dan, I do question one element, which is you talk about the greatest state school in New England. You watch out for those Maine Black Bears. I think they could take both of those teams this year.
University of New Hampshire.
Them too. Listen, UConn might be like third or fourth, depending on the outcome of this game.
Watch out for those Rams, URI. They're over the hills.
Groovy UV's too stoned to have football.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, I think we all agree Vermont is last.
No, they can't truck out a team with, you know, there's too many moving pieces in football. They can't. They got to slow down. There's too much.
They haven't been competitive since that one big white dude in basketball who beat Syracuse.
I was about to say that. You nailed it.
I wish I knew his name. It would have been a better pull. All right, folks. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we're going to talk about Mario 3, possibly another topic. Be right back.
Just Mario 3.
Yeah, probably just Mario 3. Yeah. I'm looking at the clock now. All right. Just Mario 3 talk when we come back.
Hey kids, in stores this Friday, Super Mario 3, the greatest game of all time, as seen in the movie The Wizard. Play as Mario as you get the raccoon tail and can fly like no other. 8 amazing levels, teleports, warps, mushrooms, all kinds of shit. Super Mario 3, 30th year anniversary edition, in stores today.
That's pretty good, Dan, for spur of the moment.
Thanks.
Mario 3 is the one that you beat in 8 minutes, correct?
No, Mario 1 I can do in under 10 for sure. 3's a little bit harder. I mean, I don't know. I only ever did time on it. 3 is more enjoyable just to kind of play. Like, 1, I mean, is obviously arguably the best video game ever. But 3, like, there's so many different elements to it, and you can play a lot of different cool levels. Like, you can play that ice level 6, which is just a lot of fun. I mean, that level is so way ahead of its time, because the whole game, as you're playing, like, feels one way on the controller, right? And you start playing that level 6 on ice, and you, like, it's hard to like talk about on a podcast, but the controller almost slides in your hand. Like, Mario's feet move and the controller feels different, and this is on Nintendo. Like, how did they jam all this information on one cartridge? Like, I felt like Mario had, like, the most, or Super Mario 3, should I say, had the most, like, information on a video game ever. And, you know, honestly, receiving Mario 3 was, like, one of the best days of my life. Like, I had a birthday, or sorry, Christmas was going to be coming out, or coming up in a couple months, and I was hoping to get that as a gift, but, you know, I was, you know, willing to wait the 2 months, but that was okay. And my mom, I remember, came home from the store one day and said, "Hey, I got you something." And I thought it was maybe a piece of candy or something. And I turned around and she flipped me Mario 3, and like my eyes melted, and I probably didn't leave the room for a week or something like that. But Mario 3, hands down, like, way ahead of its time video game, and so cool that they incorporated it in the movie The Wizard, which is like the best marketing of all time, given the era. Whoever came up with that's probably a genius. Like, whoever wrote that or came up with that idea, they're like, okay, let's put this video game in a movie that everyone's going to want to play more than anything as marketing leading up to it. For those who haven't seen the movie, I feel sorry for you. But at the very end of The Wizard, the final video game competition between the cool, hip kind of asshole kid and the nerdy but best in the world video game kid was Super Mario 3. So it was a new video game to both of them. And as you're watching this movie, we're talking 31 years ago now in 1987, and we're 6-7 years old. We're like, oh my God, they're playing Mario 3, which isn't even out in stores yet. Like, it blew your mind. So then you actually got Mario 3 and can play the game that they played in a movie. A-plus marketing across the board from Mario and the Wizard. I don't think you can really even come up with something like that now that's just so perfect to blend a video game in with there's that excitement. It's hard to get that level of excitement for a video game. I mean, the next comparable one, honestly, in my life was when Mortal Kombat left the arcade to the home console. People were most excited about that. And then outside of that, it was just like, playing like Madden or whatever when new video game systems came out, not actually the game itself, So Mario 3 was the most advanced game that ever came out. I'll argue is the best video game of all time. And, man, 30 years. Can't believe it.
Ryan, you want to weigh in? No?
Pretty much nailed everything. I love the game. It was one of the – I'll say this, my one thing. My parents were not big video game people. My mom especially just, didn't understand it, didn't really care for it. Mario 3 was the only game where my mom would be like, hey, you should go play that Mario game so I can watch. Because she just loved watching that Mario 3. So, that was pretty impressive back in the day because my parents were absolutely not video game people. They were go outside and play people. So the fact that my mom loved Mario and loved to watch me play was just so fun.
Yeah, you guys said it all. So it's yesterday as a recording, or probably a couple days ago, was the 30th anniversary of the release. What do we got on screen here? Oh, yes, the video. So I saw on Facebook a video that was about 6.5 minutes, which is just unbelievably long for a Facebook video. And it was about Mario 3. I start watching and it's just somebody playing. And I'm like, oh, this is fun. I'll watch for 30 seconds. I'm not going to watch a 6-minute video. But I just found myself getting entranced by it as the video was actually a guy who completed the first 4 or 5 levels flawlessly, like didn't get hit once. Got every coin, every flower, mushroom, etc. And I was just like glued to my little phone screen watching this. Like I should have been leaving for work and I'm like, fuck this. I got to see this guy. And then when it ended, I wanted more. Dan, both of you summed it up. Like I consider this the greatest video game of all time. The reasoning, which Dan, you already got into, is that it was such a leap forward. Video games, much like I compare it to... Mr. Shakur, who we played at the beginning of the show, video games and rap are kind of the two defining pop culture things of our lifetime. And both were kind of around in the 80s when we were too young, but both really hit their stride during our, late single digit, early teen years. Tupac and Biggie took rap to a level of where it never had been, a sort of seriousness. It was no longer like a party gag, as I used to call it. Super Mario was the Tupac of video games in that it went from like Mario 1 was great, but the controls, the graphics, the story, the experience of playing Mario 3 was unlike anything at the time. And there's never been such a leap. You could compare it to like the Beatles. I know this is probably blasphemous, but like the way they transformed music for everything that came after. Mario 3 did the same thing. I think about the other big games in our life, Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, then later like Call of Duty or even something like Fortnite now. And I feel like those were very groundbreaking, but would have happened at some point, at some time, in some fashion. Like there would have been another Mortal Kombat. I mean, there was Street Fighter, which was close. There could not have been another Mario 3. That game was just perfect at the time. We want to celebrate it. I'm going to play some Mario music as the bumpers for this episode. This got way more serious than I expected, but, you know, game fucking ruled.
It's an emotional topic.
It really is. What's funny is I was looking it up and like the fall of the Berlin Wall was like within a year of this. And I'm like, I don't really give a shit about that at all.
Nope.
But this had a huge impact on my life.
That was less important.
Yeah. Listen, what did the Berlin Wall ever do for me?
Nothing. In addition to special items from previous games like Super Mushroom and Firepower, the new power-ups are introduced that provide the player with new options. The Super Leaf and the Tanuki Suit give Mario Raccoon and Tanuki appearances, letting him fly.
Yeah, the Tanuki suit was overrated, but the regular Raccoon suit was pretty good.
So good. I mean, just being able to fly in a video like with Mario was just like your head caught on fire. The first time you were able to do that, you're like, oh my god. And then you found out in the first level, if you go up real high in the clouds, there's a bunch of coins up there. You remember that?
Yeah, there were hidden things in Mario 1, but there were a lot of them in Mario 3, and it just kind of was
endless.
It was kind of cool. We always joke about the hidden track on albums that we love.
Mario 3 had like
Mario 3 had the most hidden tracks, so to speak.
They did. It was really, 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 really well done. I mean, endless entertainment, really fun, challenging, like hard enough to make you crazy a couple times, and like have to walk out of the room as a kid and like walk over to the couch and just like put your head in it and yell, or like punch the couch and come back. Like, it really, I mean.
Listen, I may have thrown some controllers. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, yeah. I've definitely just like walked over to the TV and turned off the TV and the Nintendo at the same time and just walked out. Just been like, that's it. I'm raging.
You know what? I'm just thinking of this now, but Mario 3 might have been the first video game. Everything before that was sort of a fun hobby where it was sort of designed to play for a little bit, beat the game or beat a level, save it, and then go back to outdoor stuff, which is what the kids did before. I feel like Mario 3 was the beginning of where game designers realized, like, oh, these kids, these are indoor kids. Like, they have no life. They're just going to play this for 24 hours straight. So let's just make it really involved and intricate.
Binge watch. It was the original Netflix binge watch show. That and Zelda.
Yeah, Zelda, Final Fantasy. I mean, they all contributed, but, you know, Mario was right in there.
Yeah.
And that all, you know, Zelda and Final Fantasy were kind of like, they were role-playing games, which was considered a dorkier thing at the time. And Mario 3 was like, Mario was the cool game that anyone would play, you know, more mainstream. And the fact that they sort of did the binge watch thing had more of an impact. Perhaps we're looking into this too deeply, but.
Oh, I don't think so. I think this is.
No, but this is a podcast where we've talked about 95 Nebraska. Well, or 94 Nebraska for 100 hours. So if you don't like deep dives, you've come to the wrong place.
That is true. And, you know, I mean, kind of along the same lines, we're talking about, like, you know, Mario being challenging and, like, you know, making you work hard and things like that. Like, we've each played a million sports video games, and it just every week you watch the NFL and college football, but more in the NFL, and just horrible clock management, horrible just, like, third down defense, knowing the game's on the line, like not realizing the situation. Like, we've played probably thousands of games of football as coaches and video games. I'm not saying that's cool or we're qualified to be coaches. I'm just saying that we've run a lot of 2-minute drills. We know a lot of, like, well, we got to score here and get the ball back. And, like, it's just, it's incredible. You see these guys make the same mistakes over and over. Like Jason Garrett last week against the Redskins, getting like 2 yards in 40 seconds. I mean, just inexcusable. And it
I mean, Andy Reid for 15 years has been doing stuff like that.
Well, I mean, Oregon last week, case in point, they're down 27-0 at half. They come all the way back to 27-20, and they got Washington State on a 3rd and 7, and they rush 3 people with 3.5 minutes to go and 1 timeout, and they pick it up, and the game's over. You can just get 1 first down running. I mean, it's just, it's awful. Video games are amazing. You've always said it. Super Mario is a big part of it. And 3 is the best.
That's true. Best video game ever. Definitely one of the most important pop culture moments of our lifetime. And
Wizard.
You, Dan, beating Mario, I guess it was Mario 1. For some reason, I thought it was Mario 3, but you being able to beat Mario 1 in like 8 minutes, which I witnessed in person one time, as well as you, I remember playing Mortal Kombat with you in Mahoney's basement, probably in like 06, probably a dozen years after it came out. And you knew every person's finishing move and all the different moves. And I was like, Dan, what do you like play this every day? You go, I don't think I've played this in 10 years. Those were two of the most impressive things I've ever seen in my life that have no real life consequences or that don't help you in any way in actual life.
Thanks, Tom. And thank you for reminding me that I don't still know what I'm supposed to do with my life or what value I have to society. Like, what avenue does that help in where I can just recall stuff like that 12 years ago that's useless?
Yeah, like, I mean,
you want to do the Sub-Zero fatality right now? It's forward, down, forward, high punch. No problem. You rip his head right out. I mean, you want to do the Scorpion one?
Hold back, back, forward, low punch.
Well, you know, I mean, there's different variations per system. And, you know, you got to know the arcade one. You got to know the Super Nintendo. You got to know the Sega one with or without the blood code because it's a little different there, too. This is fucked up. We should end the podcast before I completely ruin myself. All right. Anything else, Tom? Welcome back to the East Coast. Bundle up. Stay warm. I saw some snow in Denver for a football game. It means you must be getting close.
We're going to enjoy the last 2.5 weeks of no inclement weather. But yeah, it's freezing. I'm pretty much reaching the point where I've got about maybe a month left to do things before Connecticut goes into hibernation.
Before we got to shut it down.
Yeah.
It's always Thanksgiving week. It's like perfect time for travel. A couple inches.
Yeah, you travel. I'll make the one homecoming trip to Syracuse for Christmas. But other than that, I'm locked up.
Smart man, Tom.
And with the baby on the way, like, this might be a 6 month Axl Rose esque disappearance.
Six months.
It got cold. Well, I'm saying it'll get cold
okay.
for the next 3 months, so you won't see me.
No, I'm not talking about
And then
that.
We'll have a baby, and so we'll be out of commission for 3 or 4 months. So I might not resurface till like June.
That's good.
I mean, I'm gonna finish out the Take the Point season. But then no one will hear from me for a long time. The next Take the Points in August of 2019 might be like the next time anyone hears from me. It'll be like when Chinese Democracy just randomly came out in 2008. People are like, oh, I didn't realize this was happening.
Now that's fucking funny. That's very funny.
All right. Well, we're not going to do better than that. So.
Nope.
Good night, everybody.
It's like when Chinese Democracy came out. There's one person listening in like Topeka, Kansas. They're like, yeah, really?
I just finished a 2-year-long website launch project, which is way longer than any of the others I've worked on. And somebody was like, oh, that project sure took a while. And I just emailed them back the album cover of Chinese Democracy. They did not get it.
You should have got a little extra raise or a little extra cut or something.
I actually went and then listened to Chinese Democracy to celebrate the release of this website. And spoiler alert, it is not good.
No. I'll take your word for it, Tom. I'm never going to play that.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note,
on behalf of Ryan, who's around, have a good night from Arizona. Good night, Tom. Good night, America.